Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we unpack the future of sales together. We will bring you the very best experts who can help you to navigate the pathway forward and shortcut the way there, learning from their successes, their failures, and everything that they can unpack to help us to take our first steps. Now, before we get stuck into today's conversation, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel so that you never miss an episode. And also, if you love what you hear, leave us a review. That really helps us to spread the good word, attract even bigger and better guests who can help us all to navigate the pathway forward for the future of sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales podcast. Today, we have on with us Phil Cleary, who is sales leader for coaching function at Salesforce in APAC. Now, Phil is an absolute weapon when it comes to all things sales and has been working in the sales arena for over 18 years now. So he has absolutely bucket loads to impart with us. He previously head up sales enablement for Salesforce and has spent over 18 years with the company. Now, we unpack in this conversation, how do you successfully onboard a salesperson? How do you build high-performance sales people? What are some of the disciplines and habits? How do we look at enablement moving forward? Do we need continuous enablement or not? And we unpack the conversation in so many ways. So make sure you have your pad and your pen for this one, as always, because Phil imparts a lot of gold in this conversation. So before we dive in, let me just tell you a little bit more background about Phil. So as I said, he's the sales leader at Salesforce for the coaching function for APAC and guides leaders to do their best work in their lives, in their complex, multifaceted roles as customer partners, business managers, and talent multipliers. He's been selling, enabling, and coaching with Salesforce for over 18 years across several regions. Phil, as you'll hear in the conversation, is Irish and moved over to Australia quite a number of years ago. Outside of that, he's also a founding member of a sales enablement society that he helped found in 2016. And so Phil is really contributing so proactively in this space of sales and sales enablement. Now, before we dive into the conversation, final shout out, the doors for RevUp have opened. If you have not come across RevUp, RevUp is our membership and our community where we bring together revenue generating teams to learn together, take action together, learning from the most epic lineup of experts. If you want further information about that, check out the link in our show notes. Doors are open now until the 30th of June, and we kick off together as a group, as a cohort, at the start of July. Now, without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation with Phil. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. Today, we have got Phil Cleary, and I am wishing right now that I had blocked his diary for 5 hours, because in the process of trying to go live, we've just been solving world peace for the past 30 minutes. So I cannot tell you how excited I am to bring you Phil, because even in the short combo we've just been having, my gosh, your brain is full of gold. So Phil, welcome to the podcast.
It's awesome to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Abby.
I am kicking myself that I didn't press record. So we're going to have to revisit certain topics that we were just talking to.
There was a lot of gold in there. It's normally where the magic happens when we're just chewing the fat. So yes, we can definitely bring some of that forward into this chat as well.
I made notes. It's all good. So I want to bring you to today. And, you know, at the time that this is going out, I think a lot of businesses will be in FY24 planning mode or probably already pretty knee deep and well developed on that. And I'm really interested in what sales skills you believe that businesses need to start developing in their teams to be successful in the financial year ahead that's sort of really pretty much on our doorstep.
I think like we've obviously gone through that process. Like our fiscal year ends in January, and so our new fiscal year started in February. So we're through all of our sales kickoffs and our fast starts and lots of different activity around that. And that includes all of our territory planning and all of our account planning for our top accounts as well. So we're kind of coming out of that phase of the stage and obviously getting into their, you know, the iterations of your account planning and how you develop it over time. I think one of the key things that we've really looked to invest our time in with our salespeople is their ability to bring a point of view to their top accounts. And so when we and this is not necessarily an existing customer, quite often it is, But when you're looking to have that, like, that business conversation with your customer to get their attention and to get their buy-in, to get their sponsorship, you know, throughout their organization, that's really what we're trying to do, is to, like, engage with that top level executive that owns the problem in the company, that owns, you know, the consequences of whatever that compelling event is, of not, you know, resolving that particular obstacle or issue that they have, and that they then that they sponsor you across the organization to go deeper, to do your proper discovery, to find out the opportunities that you can help with, and to come back, you know, with that developed sort of like POV or point of view. And so how do we go about doing that? For us, it's really all about, like, deep research for that particular, if we pick a given account, their industry right now. So what's happening? What are the trends? How do companies in that particular industry, how do they make money? And what does their supply chains look like? Where do they get their raw goods and supplies from? What has to happen to those goods and supplies? Or how do they develop the services around them? How do they gain those customers, and how do they retain those customers? So really thinking about, for that organization, all those things versus their peers, but also what makes them successful in their industry as well. And there's always like regulatory changes that are happening, or technology changes that are coming through. And of course, AI is sort of disrupting everything at the moment as well, but it's about really understanding their industry, becoming very, very conversant and able to talk at a proper executive level about the industry. Then you pick to that company level. So when I do my research on your organization, understanding what's happening globally and locally, what you're, and of course, if it's a public company, there's amazing information you can get from their shareholder report, etc. But understanding what's happening at a business level and what they're trying to achieve, and then thinking about their particular role. So for a CFO or a CIO or a head of sales or a CEO in an organization, what typically they're trying to achieve, what goals they have, what obstacles they're facing at the moment, what we're seeing across all the rest of our customers. That's a lot of the great value that we can bring to those conversations. I talk to CFOs like you all the time. Here's the things that I'm hearing. Do they resonate? Here's where we've been helping them. And then for that individual as well. So there's those sort of, like, and of course you're doing like lots of research on that individual with your Google Alerts and your LinkedIn search, et cetera, using Sales Navigator, and building a picture on the individual and your network map around them as well. So it's four levels of, like, the industry, the company, the role that they're in, and that particular individual as well, is the way that we start building that point of view. And then really being able to answer, like, three key questions we want to answer for a customer, and kind of go, based on our research, here's what we think we see and we know we've observed and what we think you're trying to achieve and how we can help you. And those three questions are: why change, why Salesforce, and why now? Why can you not maintain your status quo? What is it that there's a very specific compelling event that either we can observe, it's industry driven, it's economy driven, it's company driven, it's individual driven. There's something that you have to change to either protect market share, or to retain your employees, or to retain your customers, or to sell more product, or introduce new products, or move into new territories in the world. So what has to change for you to survive and thrive? So why change? Why Salesforce? Why do we think we're the best provider to help you to achieve what you're looking to do? And so it's not about, you know, having a product and looking for, you know, a use case, like having the hammer and looking for the nail. It's much more about understanding what they're trying to achieve and fitting into that vision for them and helping them to get there as well. And feeling secure and confident that they can get there with you as well. Like, that's a big part of this, is about the customer can do it. We're there to help you right the way through and to make you successful as much as the rest of our customers. And the final question is why now? It's this, like, whole idea of, like, you cannot wait. Why you need to act on this? You know, there's a diminishing low returns, and there is a compelling event. There's something that's going to happen that means you need to act sooner rather than later. And so being able to answer those questions and kind of go to that executive, who is that business problem owner in that organization? Are we close? And if we're close enough, do you sponsor us throughout the rest of your organization to get to test our hypothesis with you, to come back and have a good view of how we can help? And if you think we can, and whether we can get into a commercial conversation, great. But at least we're having the right level of conversation, rather than kind of like looking to, like, knock on doors and just go, hey, we have all these products, would you like to buy any of them?
I love that. And it's kind of, I'm sort of smiling as well, because Phil and I met when we were on a panel for LinkedIn, and we were talking about it, and the topic was around deep sales versus shallow sales, which is, you know, what you just talked to there about going deep with the research and personalizing and so on. And LinkedIn had this fantastic research showing that those that were exceeding quota were reaching out less, but researching every single time. So it's not the spray and pray.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely key. I'm being very focused. So that research, and sometimes when you start doing that research, you're looking into if I own a territory, and maybe, you know, if I'm a smaller business segment, I might have multiple industries sitting in my territory because I own more of a geographical territory. And maybe if I own, you know, Macquarie Park in Sydney, it's going to be a lot of small businesses that have come out of the university and startups that have come out of PhD programs. And so I have a different type of customer I'm kind of targeting, but lots of industries. Or I'm sitting within, you know, federal government, or sitting within pharmaceuticals or financial services, and I need to be an expert in that particular industry. But I'm very specific about the companies that I'm going after, because when I do my research, I may decide there isn't the opportunities here. They don't have the level of problems, or the pain that they're experiencing isn't sufficient for them to need to act in terms of like the why change and why now.
Yeah. So I actually made a note on that when you were talking before. Do you think that are you starting to see sales teams moving more towards industry specialization so that research piece is slightly easier because, oh yeah, I get retail, I'm working with retail customers all the time. And it's kind of been always the topic that comes up with how do you structure sales teams? Is it by geography? Is it by size of business? Is it by their spend with us? Do you have a viewpoint on that?
Yeah, and you know, guess what? It changes over time. So we've always had, you know, good old traditional sort of like pyramid approach to how we segment the market, and we'll have many more, you know, small to medium businesses. We would have then a sort of that mid-market GB segment sitting in the middle, and then we have the enterprise organization sitting at the top. We would always segment typically based on employee count. Because for us, every employee is a potential license based on our subscription model. So that was a good way for us to, you know, this company has 10 employees. The most licenses they'll buy is 10, or there are 5,000 employees. So depending on the employee lines, that would be, you know, typically how we would structure it and say any company over, let's say 2,000 employees, depends on the region and the industry, but 2,000 employees might be the line, will be enterprise customers. And then within a segment, traditionally, it was really just enterprise that we would segment, and we had like four or five industries. And again, the typical ones I talked about: financial services, FedGov, pharma, communication, media, utilities, etc. And so that was really at an enterprise level. But more recently, over the last 4 to 5 years, we've seen that sort of like trickle down into mid-market as well. And getting that expertise at those levels as well is becoming more important for us. Particularly as we start to verticalize a little bit about some of our solutions, which we're not going to talk about today, but we do have solutions that are very specific to those different industries or industry clouds, and it could be, you know, healthcare, or it could be financial services, it could be whatever. And so because of that reason, yeah, we tend to verticalize. When we then look at our small to medium business, and they could be majority of our reps and where the majority of our customers sit, maybe under 100 or 200 employees. And typically that could be lots of different businesses and lots of different industries, and more what those reps are solving for are those startup small business that are looking to grow type of challenges, rather than, you know, I'm a pharmaceutical organization. I have problems with my supply chain to be able to manufacture this particular pharmaceutical in this factory in this part of the world. It's a different set of challenges that they have. So we specialize verticals like at the top, but, you know, generalize more towards the bottom.
Yeah. And you mentioned when we were talking about, you know, skills to be developed and different things that we're seeing, you mentioned really briefly around AI, and I'm so fascinated at the moment. I'm the person who's obsessed with ChatGPT at the moment and testing it for absolutely everything. My brother's partner probably wins the award for me because she did it to write a speech for her parents' wedding anniversary. And I was like, that is just gold. But I am testing and trying and playing with it in business. And I think it's interesting how AI is going to impact sales, and then, you know, as sales professionals, being open to playing, trying, learning new skills. What are you seeing around AI in the sales profession?
Yeah, I think it's really early days. You know, we obviously a lot of technology platforms at the moment are leveraging much more so like transactional AI, where they're making predictions. And they're looking at, you know, you're feeding data into it, and it's machine learning, and it's figuring out the patterns, and, you know, they're in the background, it's working out all the different factor analysis, and it's going, you know, if you give me a new example of what you just fed into me, I'll predict what that result will be. So that's like, that's the entire basis of like our Einstein product, and how we use Salesforce Einstein really heavily internally is really all about probabilities, probabilities of deals closing, probabilities of what a forecast, you know, level will look like, and probabilities around what should be done next in a deal life cycle. And given in this opportunity that you're working and you're connected to these levels and it's in this industry and you're selling these products, the next thing you should be doing is the following. So it can recommend those next best steps, but it also, we can use it for existing customers to think about that next best product and look at the data underneath that says, of our customers that have, let's say, over 1,000 accounts and have, 700 contacts within that are individuals, but they don't have, they have opportunities that they're working, but they're not logging customer support cases, as an example. Then we're kind of going, okay, we know that all those customers typically that have that quantity of records in the other objects in the underlying database typically need to be able to support those customers. And we know that they get great success from that. And so that's why we go, hey, the next best conversation you need to have with your customer is about Service Cloud and maybe specifically about digital transformation. And indeed, we're most successful when we know we talk to this particular title level in an organization about that conversation as well. And so we're using AI that way to make recommendations and to predict things. I think what's really sort of like nascent at the moment is this idea of this generative AI and about like literally, you know, ChatGPT is generating as it goes. Like, what is the likelihood of this being the next best word for me to type out? And I think what's really challenging about it, obviously, like there's all these dangers, and we know executives are resigning from companies, but there's lots of tools coming out, like Google's Bard is brand new out there at the moment, and hard to get access to at the moment, but looks phenomenal. However, like, it's a very skilled operation to know how to like to craft your questions and what you need to tell. Like, quite often you need to tell ChatGPT, pretend you're an expert, pretend you're writing this as a consultant to me, pretend that, you know, so it's, there's a lot of like precursors and sort of parameters that you need to be able to define to get something really valuable out of it, right? That differentiates you. And so the issue for salespeople is, if I can just do that and say, hey, write me a proposal, you know, that convinces somebody in the pharmaceutical industry that they need to go through a digital transformation, you know, there's nothing to stop a rep from Salesforce or any of our competitors coming up with exactly the same pitch. We cannot be doing that. It's what I went back to before. Like, our entire pitch needs to be why change, why Salesforce, why now, for that industry, for the company, for the individual, and for the world that they're in, not a generic one that, you know, that has been scraped from the internet or fed into it as long ago as, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. Because a lot of what it's producing was pre-pandemic as well, mm-hmm. which is an interesting kind of soundbite about it. And it's obviously improving over time. But I think, like, AI in general, if we're looking to use it really powerfully, it's more the top of the funnel for me. When we start getting into the thrust of the deal life cycle, there's still huge value that the individual salesperson brings based on what I was talking about before, and you know, that very personalized point of view on the organization, but also the human empathy and understanding, you know, for that individual, that human reaction to what you're solving for them. One of the great, like, as a young salesperson, one of the great sales methodologies that I went through was Sandler. I don't know if you experienced that before. And so they talk about the three levels of selling. First of all, you know, what's the actual, the technical business challenge they're trying to solve? You know, our forecast is inaccurate. And the second level is what's the business impact or the financial impact of that? You know, if we continue being 10% inaccurate in our forecast every month, then that represents, you know, $200,000 for us or whatever in lost revenue. You know, or not predicted revenue. The third level of pain is that personal pain. Like, why do you want to solve this problem personally for you? And we always need to remember that individuals, budget holders and organizations will spend their company's money to solve problems that improves their personal lives. It's like, if I improve my forecast accuracy and I become a more successful salesperson, I make more commission, I might get promoted. Or on the flip side, I don't get fired. And that's the real thing of why people will spend money, why people will do anything for you as a salesperson, is because it will improve their situation in life. And the extra commission helps me pay for that holiday to Fiji or for the private school fees. And that's what I want to achieve. And that's why I would buy a solution like a Salesforce or anything else and solve that business problem. to make myself more successful. So I'm jumping over from like AI to like, you know, a very traditional, you know, sales methodology. But the whole thing is like making sure that we're focusing on that individual, and the emotive aspects of that is really key and will never go away. I don't know if and when and how artificial intelligence will be able to replicate that.
Yeah, and it's interesting to say that. I love focusing on that emotional piece. You know, is that person going for a promotion and they're trying to look good for their boss, or they're kind of, you know, in a corner where it's like, you know, I don't want to be the person that moved us onto from our existing system to the new system. And, you know, it is that absolute emotional piece that plays such a big part of that sales journey. So on that note, because we've kind of gone from technology and then talking about different things, but I want to actually touch on traits of high performance salespeople, because you've obviously worked with thousands of people all over the globe and sales professionals. Is there common things that you just see and spot and you're like, yep, these are the traits that we know make a successful salesperson, and you can see it?
For me, successful salespeople run their own franchise. They run their own franchise. They treat it like, you know, they're an IGA or the McDonald's. The company gives them the products and the resources and the expertise and the support to sell, you know, the products that they're selling into their customers. And they know exactly how to deploy a team. They know how to delegate. They know where their gaps are. They know the cadence of getting that team together. They run it like a business within a business to be successful. And so they have all of our marketing behind them. They have all of the training that we give them. They have all the resources that we give them, you know, the tools they get to sell with, but they treat it like a franchise. And I see those leaders or those salespeople being the most effective at like leading an extended team. And particularly for people that don't work for them. Like I'm fascinated as well by this topic of like influence and, you know, the Robert Cialdini work. About how do you influence people that don't necessarily report into you? And there's like the seven kind of like, you know, guiding principles, etc. And that people that are really good at doing those things and getting people to do things for them that don't work for them, in the pursuit of like making the customer more successful, are the most successful salespeople for me. And they're really good at doing that and deploying them the right way. So I think that's one aspect. What kind of sits underneath that immediately is then having a plan. And it's having that like really strong territory plan. And your territory could be 1,000 accounts, it could be 5 accounts, it could be 1 account, you know, and then the territory is really all those divisions and organizations that's underneath, you know, a larger multinational. But then they have a plan and they know exactly how they're going to execute at a territory level, at an account level, and then also at an opportunity level, that they're planning very specifically about how they're going to deploy resources, what challenges they're resolving for the customer, what outside support they need, but also what tactic they're going to use as well. And I keep talking about books. I don't know if you have gone back and read The Art of War, Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And so that's fascinating stuff. And that really kind of plays out like in sales still today. And, you know, the old battle plan methodology, it's on your bookcase, right? It's behind me too. And so, you know, making sure that if we're selling in and we're selling like there's multiple products. So at Salesforce, we have product expertise across, and so sales and service cloud and marketing cloud and now data cloud, Slack and MuleSoft and Tableau and all the different products we sell. And so we have to be very careful about when we're engaging with customers that the Salesforce bus doesn't show up and we don't have like 11 people getting off and coming in. There's like 2 customers sitting at the desk and 11 of us on the other side. You know, we have to be very careful about that. And that's what the best, again, those successful salespeople, the franchise owners, do really well, is they deploy the right resources in the right way in the right sequence based on the customer's priorities as well. So I think there's a number of different ways that they're really good at doing that, and having that plan and saying when we're doing that, we're all following the same strategy and therefore our tactics are the same. And so if we're all flanking, we shouldn't have some of the teams going frontal and some flanking, or we shouldn't have some of them fragmenting and the other one's flanking at the same time. And we all need to be consistent in terms of what our approach is and why we're doing it. And so I think, you know, particularly at an enterprise level, I think that's what sort of like they're the characteristics of many of the most successful people that I've seen and trained over, you know, the last kind of 14 or so years. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I started at IBM and I started with IBM Sales School. It's a thing. And on their grad program. And I look at it now and go, I did not appreciate what that gives you in terms of a foundation. And when you're asked to do an account plan that half the time you just think they're being a pain in your backside and trying to give you extra homework to do. I don't think I appreciated some of that disciplines and structures and so on that that gives you. And it was kind of interesting for me as someone who specialized in sales, because when I started my own business, I kind of dropped a lot of that stuff because, like, oh, you know, you don't need as much of the formalities. And then you kind of go, hang on a sec, there is so much value in that process, and it's not micromanaging. And some of those basics that you just learn to do, you almost take for granted the unbelievable value in it. So it's interesting the way you've talked about people owning their own franchise and having the structure, the plan, the strategy, and some of those foundational disciplines that are quite easy to overlook.
Yeah. And like the way to think about it, like account planning, it's a tool for you. It's a tool that makes sure you're doing the right things in the right sequence. You're not forgetting about any aspect of it, as opposed to it being a justification document. I think a lot of people think about it as, I have an account plan, therefore give me additional, you know, solution engineering resources, or allow me access to this particular partner, or get me this particular, you know, senior executive as a sponsor on the deal. That's not the way to think about your account plan. It's not about justification. It's about, you know, it's a tool for you to be able to help you to work with that extended team and manage all those different spinning plates at the same time and make sure that they're spinning in the right order. And also understanding if some of those plates are going to fall off and break, which ones you don't mind, you know, falling off and breaking, which ones you need to keep spinning as well. So yes, account planning is really key, and the best salespeople kind of realize that and use it to their advantage. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mindset shift as well when you go from tick box to the value in it for you.
Yeah.
On that note, you mentioned earlier, you talked about in your previous roles, how you were helping onboard new people within Salesforce. And I'm really fascinated in this in terms of, you know, we sometimes see a trend of people hire a salesperson's not working, salesperson's rubbish, let's get rid of the salesperson, get a new salesperson, try and onboard them, salesperson's rubbish, get rid of salesperson. And there's sort of like a cycle and a pattern. And when you stop and look at it, you go, hang on, that salesperson's not being set up for success in that role. So I'm curious to ask you around best practice or recommendations around successfully onboarding a salesperson and setting them up to fly and flourish.
I think it's, I think like the approaches to that, like I have had a lot of constraints over the last few years. You know, particularly around where we've been allowed to physically work has made it very, 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 very challenging. When you move things from being a classroom environment into entirely, you know, virtual, it changes everything. It changes, you know, the effectiveness of the learning. It changes the amount of people. It changes the duration of the training. It changes the how you can have them interact with each other, you know, in terms of like project-based activities and groups, etc. So I think there's been a lot of constraints and a lot of onboarding programs kind of coming out of the pandemic now, we can say that we're out of it, is that we're now sort of kind of going, okay, we've had sort of like programs we've had to like to morph towards to be successful, you know, in number one, the fact that we were all at home, but number two, that we were growing so fast as well. Like as an organization, Salesforce went from about 35,000 to about 75,000 people in between 2020 and 2023. And so you probably heard we're adjusting for that at the moment and making some corrections on that, which is entirely right and what we need to do. But how we've onboarded people has changed a lot over that time and what they've needed. And so I think some of the most important things that we're realizing now is that together and in person is becoming even more important than it ever has. And particularly for, yes, we can put them through a standardized program, and we would normally send people to a boot camp within their first 2 weeks of joining. We run them every couple of weeks. And at one point in time, everybody went to San Francisco. It was a big sort of like incentive to join the company as well in the first place. We don't do that anymore. You know, you would do, instead of doing, you know, an entire intensive week, we might spread it out over 10 or 14 days, etc. And you would, you know, join a Zoom instead. But you're doing an intensive learning about our culture, about our values, about our products, about some of our most successful customers, about the tool we use, about our methodology, you know, specifically, and then going through some group exercise and activities and final presentations around that. And so we were, you know, teaching the things that they needed to know. I think the biggest thing is then that not long after they actually get into role is that you bring them back in then to do what we've been calling do my job. And so you can learn all those things. And again, it's a bit like, you know, if you think about the Kirkpatrick levels of learning, you know, did I like the learning? Great, give it a tick, you know, CSAT. Did I learn something? We can certainly test that and put somebody through some level of a show you know or a certification, or they have to prove capability. What we really want to make sure is that they're then changing their behavior and they're doing it in the field in their day-to-day job. And that's what Do My Job is really about, where we bring them back in and they sit down and they start learning how to do these much more applied things, like creating an account plan, creating an opportunity plan, where they have to, like we just talked about, they have to pick a particular strategy and work out how they're going to deploy their resources. So that's kind of one aspect of it is bringing them back in and making sure that they know how to do the things that when their feet end up under their desk or they hit the road, that they know how to deploy the things that they've learned, and that they're doing it in a workshop format where they're getting to try, test it, skin their knee, get better, get some feedback, bring it back out to the field kind of thing. So, you know, we've taken an approach about having a 101 flavor of that, a 201 that's more advanced, they come back and do, not after 6 weeks, they'll come back after 3 months and do that kind of thing. So we've been experimenting with many of those. And the other aspect of that is around simulation. And having breaking them into teams, getting them to work through given scenarios, but doing it in a simulated environment, but where they're experiencing exactly what those customers are going through and what the customers are saying, what some of those situations are that are surprises that come to the customers, and how do you react to that on divert, and you know, the resources you use and the actions you take. And so that's been a big thing for us. Like we're very into simulations in many ways at Salesforce. And so we will do that both at a new hire level, at an industry level, at a more sort of enterprise level, depending on where you are in the organization as well. So I think that's part of the aspect for us as well around onboarding. Is onboarding doesn't necessarily stop, but it's not that it's kind of like that it's reboarding, but we're constantly kind of bringing them back to the things that they learned at one point, that they've practiced, that they have to get better at, and incrementing their capability in the same things, but over time as they go. And like my view is, like in my experience, it takes most people, including salespeople, about 2 years to kind of really get your head into your job and know what you're doing. And I've experienced that myself. The thing is, in today's environment and the economy, and certainly at Salesforce, nobody's in the same job for 2 years. You're getting promoted, you're moving around, you're doing something else before you've sort of like mastered, done your 10,000 hours of that particular thing. And so that's the big challenge, is like getting people ready then also for the next role, knowing they're moving up before they become an expert at one thing, kind of going, well, here's the next role you're going to do. Let's move you towards getting, ready for that particular role as well. So it's a big arc. And of course, it kind of goes up and down like this a bit, but ultimately we're just trying to get people to that next level and make sure that they're ready to grow.
And what I like about what you've just talked to is it sounds like it's very much also a continuous learning. It's not right. You had your onboarding, you had your, indoctrination and your learning, and then that's it. And I think that's something that, I'm seeing at the moment. It used to be once a year, we have our sales kickoff, we do some enablement, tick, we've done our enablement for the year versus the continuous learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things for us. And again, we kind of like, we specialize a bit, because of the scale of our teams now, but we have a very dedicated team for onboarding, and we have a dedicated team for onwards. And they might, by the time you get to that, you might be developing maybe more skills or methodology rather than necessarily product knowledge. You're growing it. Yes, we're bringing out new products all the time. And of course, with the nature of our products, and we bring out 3 new releases a year, there's more features. And so we're having to do sort of re-ups with our existing salespeople on the new things that's in our products and our packaging, et cetera. So that's always happening anyway. But it's what's the right enablement that they need at that particular part of their journey. And then the other aspect of this, Abby, that we haven't really talked about is looking at the data and figuring out where the biggest gaps are and where they need the most help. And so we've been good at kind of doing that at a sort of more aggregate level. And we might say, in a given segment or in a given region or in a given industry, here's for the salespeople that sit in those different groups, here's the training that they probably need the most based on like those aggregate numbers. And we're looking at, like, we have 20 years worth of CRM data in our own, CRM platform at this stage. So we have extensive, information to base all those things on. But we're looking at performance data. We're looking at like what people need the most. The next iteration for us is very specific, individual, data-driven enablement recommendations. And again, leveraging Einstein and this AI idea that says, for you as an individual, to the extent that you sold, you hit your target last year, and what products made up that target that you sold across the, you know, the different product sets and the size of the deals and how many big and medium and small size deals you did, how long on average they took, how well you negotiated and what your average discount was. And all that information is taken into account. And then we look at what their learning transcript has been so far. So we know you've done these 15 different training programs and it's been industry or product or skills or whatever it happens to be or methodology. So we know what you've done, to what extent. We now can like predict and say, here's the next best training that you should do. And so we're not quite there, but we're working on that right now. And it ties very much into a process that we use that we call the Accountability Performance Matrix, an APM, all about the impact of our enablement. And so what we want to be able to show is for any given class that we run, what the impact was on the cohort of individuals that did the class versus a sort of a control cohort that didn't do that. So these 20 reps took a negotiation skills class yesterday, and we're going to measure them in 30 days time against 30 individuals that didn't take that class. And so what was their ability to generate more pipeline, close ACV, lots of different, you know, KPIs and metrics within that. But how do we look at the success of that cohort of people versus the people that didn't do it, the control group, over 30, 60 and a 90 day period, and look at how that sort of improved or not over time. And for us, that's really, it's really powerful as an enablement organization, because we know, number one, what we should keep doing more of because it's really successful. Number two, what we should probably stop doing. This course isn't really resonating. It's not hitting the mark. We're not getting great results from it. The ROI, that level four of Kirkpatrick, isn't really paying off. We should stop running this course. For us to grow and be able to be more impactful for you, the business, we're going to need, you know, this number of additional headcount that will focus on these different areas. And it becomes easier for us to justify our existence. And we become a business within a business and get funding based on the impact that we're providing to our customers, which is our sales leaders in the business.
I love that. I wanted to ask that, like, how do you measure effective sales enablement? So you just talked to that so well. And I love what you're talking to there about more personalized, what does this individual need as the next step on their journey? On that note, you talked there quite a bit around when you're measuring the effectiveness, you know, you look at the 30, 60, 90 days post-training, yeah. What do they go do? How do you help, or do you help people to, when the rubber hits the road, what do we do? Because we're all very good at going and learning and going, God, yeah, I should do more of that. And then we walk out of the enablement, our inbox has exploded, we've got 20,000 missed calls and demands, and then yeah. It's really easy to fall back into bad habits. So is there anything that you focus on to help people to put their learnings into practice?
We coach our leaders to be coaches. So obviously it's something that I have a lot of vested interest in. And, you know, I'm coaching various different cohorts. I coach a lot of our new leaders that come in. I'll coach our top performers, and I'll coach also any nominations, you know, and at any one time, I'm kind of juggling probably about 35 to 45 coachees that I'm speaking to, you know, every kind of 2 weeks or so. And we talk about lots of different things, and we're talking to those leaders about how are they a talent multiplier in their business? How are they a business manager? How do they do sort of the nuts and bolts and the engine, you know, part of their business? How are they a really great customer partner as well? And how are they engaging with our customers to drive those relationships and make them successful also? So we're coaching around these areas, but from a talent multiplier perspective, it's all about how do you coach your salespeople? So I'm coaching leaders to be coaches in the field. And again, it's that level three of Kirkpatrick, which is the behavior. How do we assess for that? Because again, CSAT for level one, you know, assessment for level two, ROI with the APM for level four, that level three in the middle about like, how do you measure for those behaviors? It's difficult to measure, but the best way is to put an educated manager in the field with them that can assess them as they go and be able to give them real-time feedback. Coming back from, you know, from the sales meeting in the back of the Uber, I noticed in the meeting, you know, the following happened. What did you think about that? How could we have done that differently? The next time, how might you do that? When you do that, let's kind of like reconvene and see how that went for you. Giving them that coaching framework to be able to improve their salespeople. And I think for us, that's where that rubber is hitting the road. And making sure that our managers, like, it's difficult for, we're rolling out all this curricula to all of our learners that are the salespeople on the front line, those account executives, but all of their managers as well. It's a lot for those managers to get across. Because again, be a great customer partner, be a great business manager, be a great talentable supplier, but also know everything that your salespeople need to know as well about our products, about their methodology, about the skills they need, about how to be great at discovery or a great negotiator or great at doing a demo or great at managing that account and relationship on an ongoing basis. All of that, like the manager also needs to be really good at as well. So for me, rubber hits the road, driving impact and enablement goes through our frontline leaders.
Yeah, love that. So before I go into a couple of quickfire questions for you, I've got to ask you about revenue enablement. I'm loving the trend at the moment, and we as a business has really moved from just doing pure, you know, sales enablement to also looking at how do we bring everyone on the bus. So that could be sales support, that could be some of the account managers who don't have a direct number above their head, they're more in the relationship space. It could be marketing, it could be pre-sales, and how are we getting everyone who's revenue generating and client facing, you know, having a shared understanding and learning together. And we're seeing some interesting results around that. I'm really curious as to whether that's something that you've played with, tried, you've seen, and your thoughts on that.
You know what? It's really interesting because I do see lots of my former colleagues that I've built up over the years, my network of enablement people across the world, that leave Salesforce. When they land in another organization, it's normally called revenue enablement. And so it certainly seems to be much more of a trend in maybe smaller up and coming organizations where they have the opportunity to establish it. And quite often it's where the sales leader, you know, and the head of sales in this organization was maybe, you know, a mid to senior sales leader in a much bigger organization, maybe a Salesforce in the past. And so they bring all those best practices with them. And they go, when I was at Salesforce, we had this, 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 and this function. And so we end up seeing in those organizations, things like sales enablement or revenue enablement get established sort of from the get-go because they know that that's what they need to be successful. For us, we don't necessarily call it revenue enablement inside of Salesforce, but all those different constituent members of that customer-facing, sales, revenue-generating community are all enabled. And one you know, particular way that we like to pull all these things together is we have like, I kind of think about it as a bit like an engine. If you think about, if you ever watch any of those, you know, car mechanic shows that are all over TV these days, and they're restoring like an old car and they open up the engine and you see all these like, all the cogs or the gears, and they're all interconnected, but they're all different sizes. And they all have like a, you know, a chain or a belt around them to make sure that they run at the right speed and they're synchronizing properly. And so we should always make sure to change our timing belts every 30,000 miles. But like in any organization, you have all these different gears or cogs. And so you'll have a pretty big one that's sales, and you have another one that's marketing. You'll have another one that's actually your sales operations or the folks that are processing orders and doing things like billing and invoicing and renewals, etc. You have your enablement organization that's trying to train a lot of those different, you know, cogs at the same time. And one of those most useful, you know, cogs that go in the middle or even like a belt that goes around the outside or a chain is what we call sales programs. And so we have a sales programs productivity organization, and they kind of sit in the middle and they really coordinate really tightly all the things that those different teams are doing. So if we are looking to drive a particular product into a particular industry, number one, make sure we have like the marketing campaign that's going, and it's either an event that's happening, or there's advertising, or there's the right sort of like banner ads or placement that's happening, or we're producing the right series of content on Salesforce Plus or whatever. So, you know, there's some sort of like marketing activity that's happening, you know, that we're training salespeople on how to then follow up on that. So they know intimately what the marketing campaign is. They know who from their account base and their territory either has been targeted or invited or has reacted or responded to that particular campaign. They know very specifically who to call, what to say to them, what questions to ask, and what to do next. What's the next step? Is it a further, you know, event that we invite them to, etc.? So we're making sure we're enabling them not only on the product, but also the sort of the campaign that's been happening, what to do next. But also, how do you then think about bringing a number of those different products together in a particular package that produces sort of like a use case, maybe within an industry as well and a size organization? And we call those sales plays. And so those plays will be made up of a series of different aspects and approaches. And we might be saying, okay, we're looking to drive digital transformation for service buyers in, I'll pick it again, the pharmaceutical industry. And we'll have a play around that. And the play will be, here's everything you need to be successful to do that. The campaign that's happened, the scripts to use, the questions to ask, the objections that you'll get, the customer use cases that you'll use. And that's where the play really helps And we have like recommended plays. You know, I talked about AI before and making recommendations about the next best product. Our AI engine, Einstein, also recommends the next best play to deploy for that customer as well. And it's really powerful because it could be two or three different SKUs, you know, different products that you're selling that you put together a certain way. And it's to be used in a particular use case. And it may be deployed with a particular professional service implementation package as well. And so those plays kind of pull together all those different things. And we also tie in things like spiffs, like the sales incentives into that as well to drive particular behaviors. But our sales programs team pull all those different constituent members that are trying to drive sales in the organization. And for me, that's like, as I know, like a lot of different organizations will define revenue enablement slightly differently, but enabling those teams individually, but collectively how to work together and get them to synchronize properly, it for me is the kind of the secret to actually getting the most out of like having a revenue enablement function.
I love that. I've just written so many notes. And what I love as well, you hit on a topic that we need a whole nother podcast around, which is, again, enabling the sales team to leverage the marketing campaign, how to follow up on the leads. These are the objections that you're going to get. Be motivated and inspired because there's a spiff and there's an incentive in place. And I love that you've talked to that because, you know, for us, we look at sometimes people go, well, why was that marketing campaign a fail? And sales didn't even know it was happening. So that connection, like you said, everyone's on the bus, everyone's got their part to play, is so, so, so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've got two quick fire questions for you because I'm conscious I do have to let you run at some point and, you know, get back to the day job. My first one is, what has been the best investment you have made in your own development?
I'm one of those people that like just wants to do all the courses that are available. You know, I've always been that kind of person, and I'm like, okay, sign me up. What's the new one? And I want to go and do it. But then I think that's also kind of part of the reason why I probably got into enablement, because I like to teach because I learn. And so for me, you know, for everything that I've ever been, you know, what we call T3 or train the trainer, I've been T3'd on and be qualified to then go and teach inside the company. Skills or product or whatever. I do that because I want to understand the subject matter and I want to become an expert in that. And I want to be able to handle the objections and answer the questions and give the coaching. And so, you know, that's kind of the first thing I think is I'm always learning for that reason. I read a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts for that same reason as well. I think that out of all of those things, the biggest thing for me has set me on a new trajectory in my career and my life has been the time that I spent with my coaching training. And so I've done a couple of different coaching programs. I have about 60 hours of sort of coaching tuition under my belt and about the same so far of actual coaching in the field. And so now that I'm doing this role full time since the beginning of this year, it's sort of like it's growing pretty quickly. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting my official ICF qualifications, et cetera. I should be able to do that pretty easily this year. And that for me has been the biggest kind of like step forward. I think in the future, you know, when I think we have this idea at Salesforce of an individual development plan. And in that, it's part of our career development sort of like framework we use. And so I will be having managed, you know, lots of people over time, will be coaching people on theirs. In my IDP, my sort of like 5 to 7 year vision, and goodness knows, if you asked me like 5 or 7 years ago, would I still be at Salesforce in Sydney? I probably would have said no. But I think in the future for me, I definitely wanted to be able to move toward down the coaching, you know, path. It's where I get like a huge amount of satisfaction from, where I bring a lot of experience and knowledge into. But it's a bit like when I go back to that very first job I had at Salesforce of being the sales development rep. I really love just like listening to people and what they're trying to achieve and what's getting in the way and how I can help them to get there. And that was one of those biggest things. I always remember as well, being that sales development rep, and believe it or not, was in my mid-20s in those days and not that much business acumen, but I would talk to these businesses and they will be, you know, they could be a small business of like, you know, 10 or 15 employees. And I remember there was one business I spoke to and their whole thing was that they were selling these little small Zipcat speedboats. And I was like, how did you get into like, why did you decide to like, you know, get into selling like these little mini 2-people speedboats that would be used, you know, in a lake in the UK somewhere. And they were like, well, the two of us were really, you know, big fans and we were in this you know, this club and we loved doing it. It was a pastime. So we decided to get into it. Okay, great. So how do you know how many boats you're going to sell next month? Don't know. How do you make a prediction about how much revenue you're going to have coming in so that you as a small business owner know which supplier you're going to pay, or if you can pay your rent, or if you can pay your employees, or if you can put petrol in your delivery vans? So how do you forecast at the moment? Oh, we don't really forecast. Well, what's your sales process? We don't really have a sales process. You know, we get the boats in and, you know, people come to us and they buy them. And so it was fascinating for me to kind of realize that, like, a lot of businesses like get sprung up and startups, and they have no sales acumen in the organization at all about having a pipeline and about prospecting and having marketing supporting all of that. And having this idea of forecasting and predicting the revenue and knowing that, like, I'm predicting that I'm going to sell, you know, 4 boats next month. So therefore I'll have 100,000, you know, Great British pounds in the bank. And therefore I can either invest, I know how much I'm going to have to pay for my outgoings. I might want to invest with a new employee or additional premises or whatever. But if I miss that forecast and I only bring in like £50,000, you know, it's important for me to have a good sense that I'm not going to do that. Equally, if I actually, you know, sold an extra boat and I had £125,000, you know, pounds coming in, that's £35,000 I didn't expect to come in. And I'm not getting that money to work for me. And so as a biz, I had to go through this whole education with so many different customers, not just about forecasting, but all those different business acumen things to help them become better and survive as a business. And I feel like I'm kind of coming full circle, and I'm talking to sales leaders now about how they survive and thrive as sales leaders. And that's what, you know, will bring me forward is, and again, the biggest, you know, investment for myself, it's really, you know, leading me down the path of being able to do what gives me the most delight in life, which is helping other people, helping them to find their path, and removing the barriers for them and helping everyone to be successful. And so that's a long answer to your quick fire question about what I invested in myself in.
That is all good. I love the answer. So I know you've got a dash in a minute and I've got to let you go, but I have to ask a cruel question before you do. In the background, for those watching on video, we can see lovely, lovely bookshelf, which is my obsession. Top book recommendation to leave us with?
Well, this is not all my books. This is just, you know, the top ones. So all of those. But there's two. There's a business book that I really love. I have it here. It's by Marshall Goldsmith, and it's called What Got You Here Will Get You There. This book is probably, I'll have a look at the front to see when it came out. I think it's probably 25, 30 years old. Actually came out in 2007, first of all. And so this book is all about how, as the name suggests, what got you to where you are in your career and what brought you success so far is not what's going to necessarily make you successful in the future. And so for me, as I've changed my role across Salesforce and I've moved different countries, as I've done that as well, it's almost been like, and I think it's why I've been here for 18 years so far, it's been like working for different companies, doing different things and having different jobs over a period of time. And so I've promoted, you know, across different titles, and I've probably had about, you know, 8 or 9 promotions over that time. And so for me, it's like this book is always sort of a go back to, which is like, okay, I think I've sort of like got like to 9,999 hours and I'm almost an expert here, but what do I need to do to get to that next level? What do I need to re-educate myself? What do I need to forget, leave behind and move forward with? So what got you here will get you there. The other one that I love, and I'm very fascinated by psychology and people's psychology and how that applies to the sales process and coaching as well. And it's by a guy called Dr. Eric Byrne, who's no longer with us, but he wrote a book called Games People Play. And so if you were to Google that, you'd find his website with lots of examples in there. It's all about transactional analysis and how in any relationship or transaction, we are either the parent or the child or the adult, and what those different games are that people play with each other, and how those dynamics kind of play out, and to recognize that. So then, you know, having read that book, then suddenly I'm in some sort of like a conversation with my wife or with my kids or with my parents or with my boss or with someone that's reporting into me. And I'm like, okay, what role am I playing here? The roles that I don't want to play are being the child or being the adult. Being the parent, you know, try to move myself towards adult as much as possible. But like having that self-realization, awareness of where you are, comes from that book. So I would thoroughly recommend. It's not very big, you know, only a couple of hundred pages, if even. And my short read, but like just so much goodness in there to be able to talk about.
Phil, I could keep talking to you for 1,000 years. We are going to have part 2. And I have loved every second of this. I have so many notes written, scribbled down of things that you prompted me and thought of. We will put your LinkedIn link in the show notes so that if anyone wants to connect with you and hit you up, they can do so. And thank you so, so much for sharing so much with us.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. Great to sort of like go down memory lane a little bit and you know, articulate. I think like all of us, there's things that we know, we've experienced, and we just have, you know, between our ears, we haven't really thought about you clearly. So this has been great fun to be able to sort of extract that out and sort of, you know, put it into words as well. So thank you, Abby, for spending the time with me too.
Thanks, Phil.
Before you leave us, doors have officially opened for our next intake of RevUp. Doors will be closing on the 30th of June. Now, if you have not heard about RevUp, this is our new revenue enablement where your revenue generating teams will all come together to learn from leading experts. The experts that we have lined up to teach the RevUp system are absolutely incredible. We have LinkedIn teaching social selling. We have Julie Masters teaching influence. We have Maz Farrelly, whose content has had 8 billion views, teaching us about storytelling and standing out from the crowd. We have Jay Pottinger teaching us about productivity and many more. We will go through the entire journey of how do you rev up your sales aligned to these leading experts. So if you want to check out RevUp before the doors close on the 30th of June, then simply click the link in our show notes and visit member.salesredefined.com.au and you can find out all the details you need to know, or you can book in for a chat. We love to have a chat to see whether it's the right fit for your revenue generating teams.